Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. It is Thursday, the 5th of October, and hopefully you're having a lovely day. We certainly are. We have just a studio filled with cool people, and we're going to tell you all about them. And then we'll get started. We've got a lot to talk about, a lot going on as always. Joining us for the discussion this morning, communications consultant Joe Bonilla is here. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning.
Very nice to have you on the program as always. We also welcome back Professor of Political Science at Siena College, Vera Acarius Kelly. Thank you very much for being with us.
Nice to be here.
Really love having you here. Our dear friend, Daily Freeman publisher emeritus Ira Festville, doing 2 weeks in a row.
Yes, that's about all I can handle.
Yeah.
Yes, I'll be gone for about another 6 months, but thank you anyway. Nice to be here.
Your agent is so difficult to work with. It's really, really...
Well, it's the demand for all the M&Ms, which...
And our studio audience is your wife.
Yes,
is here,
yes.
Which, welcome.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
She's going to sit in the room for an hour and a half, and she has nowhere to do but listen to me, which is not necessarily what happens outside of this studio.
Confess, when you come home, does she ever look at you and say, Ira, I wouldn't have said that.
All the time.
Yeah. Although I think probably everyone in this room could say that. I would think. I don't know. Don't you get that from...
No, because she doesn't listen. No,
that is not true.
She does. She does listen, and she does say... I raised my eyebrow when that happened. When you said that.
And who's this person in the studio?
Well, my God, Alan is back. We are thrilled. It's been a long time. You were away on vacation.
Yeah, we went out to the West Coast, and then we came back, and 2 days later, I had a complicated back operation with the brilliant Dr. Jean Chen. At Gloversville, he's a guy who goes all around the country telling people how to do this robotic, non-invasive surgery, and he did it. But back operations take a little time to get over, and that's what happened. So there you are.
You look great.
You sound surprised.
I feel you
well,
look great.
Well, I mean, he just had a back operation.
Well, I had hip surgery. How do I look?
No.
I'm not fishing for a compliment. I look lousy like I always do.
No, you look great, but you also had it, what, two
oh,
months
that's true.
Ago?
Yes.
I mean, he had it last week.
Fair point. Yeah, How long can you milk these things?
Well, yeah. No, it's fine. Thank you very much. I'll just sit in the dark and put my head together.
So when we say Alan's back, it has any number of meanings.
Yes, multiple meanings.
Right. We want to talk a little bit, right, Joe, about this very serious question about the lockbox.
Yes.
You and I both know, I go out in the front office and people say, well, we'll do okay. And I always say, I'm scared. We have over $200,000 to get halfway in the drive in the lockbox, and that's not going to be easy. It would be easy if you remember a couple of facts. During the fund drive itself, we make at least $100,000 a day. So to have $200,000 to go in a week should be okay, but it doesn't go that way. It just means that anybody who cares about this station will say, this is the time to put it in. And don't be calling me up and don't be yelling at me if you, in fact, think that the fund drives used to be too long. The last two fund drives have basically been a day long, and we want to make sure that that happens again. Now, Joe, it's been phenomenal. Everybody helps out. And there have been two major helping hands here. You want to tell us about them?
Absolutely. First of all, we have a pair of tickets to an evening at the Egg with Harry Belafonte. The great Harry Belafonte, the legendary Harry Belafonte, who will be in conversation with Alan on Saturday, November 11th at 7:30. And this is a very cool event, and you can get your tickets by simply calling and pledging or going to the website, going to the pull-down menu and seeing tickets for Harry Belafonte. Actual tickets will be sold, so... That means that if you don't have one of those tickets, you can't get in.
No, you're so right. And, you know, a lot of people now count on walk-ups to do it, but there won't be walk-ups here. This is going to be a sold-out event. This is a chance for people to hear the legendary Harry Belafonte. And by the way, when they say in conversation with me, my idea is just the fewer the questions, the better the whole thing will go.
Tell me about the 1960s, and then 3 hours later. Yeah.
No, that's what you really need. Yeah. He's a brilliant, committed, decent guy, and anybody who misses this chance is going to have missed the chance of a lifetime.
Oh,
really.
I say this, I've been saying this the last couple of days, I'll just say it again, because people have been calling up saying, oh, I can't wait to hear him perform. Well, he'll be talking, he will not be singing, but just so you know, it's a conversation. But we are very, very thrilled to work with our good friends at The Egg on this.
Peter Lesser.
The best. Saturday, November 11th at 7:30, and that is on the table. Also, almost sold out. Last gasp, last chance. Friday, November 3rd at 7:30 at the Egg, a pair of tickets to the WAMC exclusive Capital Steps performance, and a pledge of $150 will get you a pair of tickets for that. Orange is the New Barack is the name of the show. It's the name of the new album. Alan will be a part of that as well. They always put him in some costume and make him look funny.
My favorite one was when they had me getting on the airplane and being searched. I was the schlump who was being searched. And behind me, everybody...
Did you enjoy the search? Enjoy the pat-down?
And behind me, every piece of garbage in the world, Osama bin Laden and other people were getting on the plane unencumbered. So it was a good bit. Don't worry, folks. You're not going to get more than 2 seconds of Alan.
It's a great show. This is the fourth time we're doing it. All three have been have been sellouts, and I'm sure this one will be as well.
It's a place we all gather. Folks, I just want to say one thing, Joe, if I may.
Absolutely.
And that is really, these are great things, but in the end, it's the $5 or the $1,000 which people give, and they say, I love my radio station. I don't care about the tickets. I don't care about anything. I just want to see it continue. We can't lose this thing. And Joe, it is to your credit, and we keep hearing this anywhere I go about this roundtable program and this particular segment on the roundtable, which you handle so well, is really the talk of the town.
I am, but just the zookeeper. But thank you. I must say that you do hear about it, and if everyone who wrote us a nice or mean letter pledged a dollar right now, we'd be done.
Right. Right.
And nice, what kind of letter?
A mean letter.
I have told this story too many times, but a nurse of my acquaintance said to me the other day, I believed you when you said $5 would be enough. And I had to sell a piece of scrap metal. I was so poor. But a piece of $5 would be enough. I gave the $5 and I felt so much better. I think it's great.
We welcome you to do that right now. We'll give you a few moments to do so. WAMC.org. Also, you can call this phone number, 800-323-9262. And just go to zero, and operators are standing by. We are going to give you a moment or two to do that. We're going to take a moment or two to hear some underwriting announcements, and then the people who we've assembled in this room will actually be given the opportunity to speak. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. And our wonderful panel is here, Alan Chartok, Vera Akarios-Kelly, Ira Fussfeld, Joe Bonilla, and we welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org. We'll start off by talking about the story in Las Vegas. Continues to baffle, really, the FBI as to what the motive was in this mass shooting. In her first public statement, the girlfriend of the gunman said Wednesday that he had sent her on a trip to the Philippines and wired her money there, but that she did not know he was planning to harm anyone. The statement was read by her lawyer. Meanwhile, authorities found evidence that the gunman planned to escape after the shooting and survive. Also, the Bureau is trying to reconstruct his actions, including finding and interviewing everyone and anyone who crossed his path in recent weeks. The killer, Stephen Paddock, is an individual, according to the FBI, is an individual who was not on our radar or anyone's radar prior to the event. The police on Tuesday revised the number of victims killed on Sunday to 58. All but three of the people have been identified. And President Trump visited Las Vegas yesterday, offered words of support for the victims. Quote, the message that I have is that we have a great country and we are there for you. But the big story really to come out of this is how little actually at this point we know. Normally, and the FBI officials say this, they would know a lot more about the pattern and how a person would fit into a pattern, and they're not finding that with this particular individual.
You know, Joe, I just can't even watch it anymore. You know, I turn on CNN, I want to know about Trump, I want to know about healthcare for children, I want to know about all that stuff, but it's all wall-to-wall about this guy, and I find it very difficult. And then they bring on the biographies of the brief biographies of the people who got killed, and you know, I am just bereft by the whole thing. I understand that news directors put their fingers up in the air and decide that news should be based on what people want, but I sure don't want it. I mean, I really have had enough of this, and I think that the rationale for finding out about him, if you can, is that it might prevent somebody from doing the same thing again, although I doubt it. I'm fascinated by one thing that we heard in the beginning in terms of motive that we haven't heard since. And that is, as you all remember, ISIS took credit for this.
Well,
remember that?
Yeah.
Well, you say, well, and it's possible they take credit for anything.
That's correct.
Yeah. But on the other hand, the downside is, what if? I mean, nothing can be dismissed, right? Nothing can be dismissed as a possibility because we have no idea what set this mild-mannered accountant off.
Well, I have to say I disagree with you on that because if we had any indication of an international connection, we would have known something by now. I don't think the intelligence agencies are that tight-lipped, or the FBI, to not even bring that into the conversation. What I see instead is that we're desperately looking for some explanation without waiting for full reports. That tends to be the case nearly always. If the perpetrator of the violence is African American or of a different religious belief than what the mainstream white Americans believe is their Christian heritage, then we immediately talk about terrorism, we suspect certain motives. But this is a white male, so therefore we talk about, well, we don't really know what's going on. We talk about mental illness first. We just don't have a description for or an explanation for it. So I find that conversation really interesting. I was actually listening to some sort of very conservative radio shows who were mentioning the issue that, in fact, the FBI must be hiding information from us because usually we know something by now and they must have something that they don't want us to think about. So I think it's best to wait out the information and let analysts interview the girlfriend. They're clearly doing that. They're looking at language, terms, expressions used, body language, and they do a lot of careful analysis. And I don't like the idea of just jumping to conclusions. And
by the way, Professor, if I may interrupt for a second and tell you that I don't think we have a major disagreement. I'm just simply saying it is interesting that ISIS from minute one took credit for this happening. I'm not saying it's true. I'm just simply saying everything that is potentially possible here has to be examined.
I agree. I agree with you, Alan. What I'm saying is that ISIS, and I think you were saying that in the beginning, ISIS claims responsibility for about everything now because they are in a very difficult situation. We should think of ISIS soon claiming responsibility for what is going on in Myanmar, Burma, with Rohingya refugees, and so on. Yemen. I mean, there are lots of opportunities for ISIS to make claims in the near future, but this is probably not it.
I agree with all that you're saying about waiting for the information to come out. But it also is interesting to me that the FBI is coming out directly saying we don't have what we feel we should have, and anyone who has ever crossed path and looked at this guy sneeze at some point, please call us because we need that information. So that they seem to be some not desperate exactly, but they're certainly thirsty for as much information.
So
as
are you suggesting that perhaps what we have here is an ability to to imbibe the wrong word, the FBI with more power and more than they actually have, or more insight than they actually have?
I mean, I think the FBI is asking for as much information as they possibly can get, which indicates, sure, at least to me, that they are starving for that information, that it's not readily available through the searches, through the interviews that they've had so far.
And I guess one of the things, too, is that there's not really a lot of history about this guy. He had worked with the federal government for 10 years from the 70s to the mid-80s, and even his brother had mentioned he hadn't even spoken to him in about 20 years. So really that profile on the shooter, and really, you know, it's harder than normal than it would be.
You know, it's interesting that you say that, because we have seen other instances in which people are harboring resentments of one kind or another, postal employees and others who have perfectly legitimate, wonderful jobs, really. The post office is a great place to work, if you think about it. It's an idyllic place. And yet, every once in a while, somebody gets a little crazy.
All right, we have to take a break. I promise I'll let your husband speak in a moment. We'll be right back. We're going to continue our conversation.
No, no.
Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. We'll be right back after this. Well, somebody was shot out of a cannon today, and it weirdly wasn't Alan. Well,
oh, Joe, we'll get what does that mean?
No, I like it. It's great. Good morning. Welcome back. We have Alan Chartok, Vera Karius-Kelly, Ira Fussfeld, Joe Bonilla, and we welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org. Ira, what say you?
Well, I look at these things through a different prism, perhaps, than you folks, because of my background. I look at all these stories as media stories, and I wonder how the media is handling it, and are they, in my view, handling it responsibly and accurately? And in this case, I would say they are responsible and they are accurate from based on what we know. I just think there's too much of it. As Alan points out, there's almost so much of this that you can absorb. I'm not saying that it's not the most important story. I'm not saying that the New York Times shouldn't be devoting 4 or 5 pages of stories, but when most of us are getting our news these days either through the internet or more likely through one of the cable news networks, and the cable news networks go wall to wall on a story like this, that means two things. One is that they don't have a lot to say, and they're going to wind up repeating themselves and do a lot of idle speculation, much of it incorrect. And secondly, they're going to be doing it at the expense of all of the other stories going on in the world. And I'm still interested in knowing what's going on in the Mueller investigation, and I'm still interested in knowing how the recovery is going in Puerto Rico. I mean, we were talking not that long ago about how the Trump administration wasn't paying attention to Puerto Rico, whereas the media was. Well, all of a sudden, the media forgot about Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
So there's that. I do think, regarding the specifics of the case, I'm old enough to still feel like the FBI is going to solve this case. I'm willing to give the FBI space. But in the short term, I'm more interested to see what, if anything, we can do to prevent these things from happening.
Sure.
And I've gone to Las Vegas or other hotels often enough to say that I wouldn't be offended if I had to go through metal detectors when I checked into a hotel. I'm willing to wonder what can be done about these outdoor concerts and whether we should start having snipers, police snipers on top of roofs facing tall buildings nearby. I mean, I wondered the other night, I was watching the Yankees game, and I've been in that neighborhood in the Bronx a million times. Well, there are apartment buildings right across the street from Yankee Stadium. Could somebody have climbed up on the roof of an apartment building and shot into the bleachers? The big kahuna, which is the gun control question, and to the extent that people are saying it's too soon, well, when is it too soon to talk about gun control if it's not after almost 60 people?
No, I know everybody wants to check in on this, but I am fascinated by the Republicans running the other way on this. We see two things, two pieces of evidence that they say, uh-oh, this is going to kill us here. The first is that the Speaker has announced at the end of the silencer bill, he's not bringing up the silencer bill, for which, as you know, incredible chutzpah, the gun control, the anti-gun control people are saying we need it because it's bad for our ears to hear the
Well, there's a great video of Donald Trump Jr. shooting with a silencer and saying how great it is because it doesn't hurt his ears to shoot the
right,
gun.
Yeah, right, right. So there's that one. And then, of course, they're now talking about doing away with these enhancements to the rifles.
The bump stocks.
And saying maybe it's time. All that means to me is they've got their fingers up in the air. They've got their pollsters out there and saying, uh-oh, this may be the tipping point.
Right.
I mean, even the whole question on militarization of, you know, private weapons. The whole question about since when is it constitutionally protected to have scopes, militarized weapons with bump stocks or silencers? I'm really at a loss when I hear those.
You're a German citizen,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Well, what's the law in Germany?
So it's actually quite interesting when you think about it. You know, in Germany, we have a longstanding hunting culture and we have rifle clubs. And so a lot of people have weapons in Germany. However, we have a very stringent regulatory law when it comes to privately held weapons. So you have to have your weapons stored in a locked facility. Inspectors can check your club at any point to make sure you do not have your munition with your weapon and it is locked away properly, stored properly. We also have the requirement of special insurance. So if you have a weapon and you have passed all the inspections and have followed all the regulations, you have to have liability insurance.
Just like with a car.
Exactly, because it is something that you could cause a public health problem, risk, right? It's a risk factor. And so we don't have those kinds of discussions that it is my right to have, certain types of weapons. Clubs organize around sort of traditional festivals where maybe historical guns are taken out and there are performances of shooting. There are clubs with adjacent rifle ranges where you go and shoot and practice, but it is not the sort of this general availability to guns.
Yeah, I think the one thing that really shakes me to the core is, you know, we do large-scale events, we consult with event planners, and so something like this where you had this outdoor festival and you have so many buildings, you know, high-rise buildings around, you know, when we look at doing security, you know, inside and outside the venue, it's one of those things where, you know, we look at what's happening on the ground, we look at what's happening underneath the ground.
Just to give people your background, you've done this.
We've done this, right.
Yeah.
In terms of advanced work.
You've gotten ready for presidential visits.
Right. When you look at every single possible angle, you look at different vantage points where somebody could be on a roof or in another building, the windows, everything. So for something like this, and you look at the Mandalay Bay, you look at Luxor right across the street on the Strip, it's something where It really shakes you to the core when you have large-scale festivals, you have street festivals, you have block parties, whatever it could be. It really is one of those moments where you really think, you know, what is the balance between liberty and security right here?
When you think about as Alan mentioned, the issues regarding gun control and what's going on, and of course the GOP, there also are the Democrats, but there are some Republicans who are open to discussing a proposal to ban these devices, these bump stocks, and so that it seems to be starting to happen. There have been signals. There's an article in the Washington Post this morning that maybe this is different, but you have to wonder at what point there is enough momentum, because you even as you have these few Republicans coming forward, you still have the leadership saying we're not ready to talk about it yet?
I want to refer everybody, I believe, because I read so many newspapers in the middle of the night that I don't even know anymore, but I believe it was the New York Times which listed all of the contributions to the major to the major politicians. And some of these senators were getting over $1 million from the, you know, from the gun lobby to do this. This has become democracy or government for sale at this stage. And at some point, somebody wakes up and says, A, one of two things. A, this is really bad stuff, and I've got to meet my maker sooner or later, and I got to look in a mirror, and I have children, and it's this could have been any of this. And the other is, you know, this thing is going to turn on me, and I'm going to be on the wrong side of this, so I have to really start worrying about it. But when Speaker Ryan, of all people, who I'm sorry, I consider to be a despicable human being, when Speaker Ryan talks about it's not time to bring up the, you know, the silencer bill, that says a lot to me that they're beginning to worry about all this.
You know, there I don't want to use the wrong number, but I believe, and stop me immediately if I'm wrong, I believe there are hundreds of millions of weapons in the country,
300 million, we think 300 million. Yeah.
I was watching the Vietnam series on PBS, and they made reference to the fact that when the U.S. was leaving Vietnam, they had a million M16s that they left behind for the Vietnamese army. I mean, who knows where any of these guns are, whether there or here. Somebody wrote in yesterday, and you, Alan, said, "What do you want us to do? Give up?" No, we don't want to give up. We can't throw up our hands. What I believe is going to happen is that these gun incidents are going to continue to happen, regardless of what common sense measures are taken by Congress, if any, such as regarding the silencers and the bump stocks, and the most importantly, in my view, the registration and background checks. I think they can do all of those things, and I don't suggest that they shouldn't do all of those things. I think that there are so many millions of guns out there that that unfortunately the next Las Vegas is going to happen regardless of what's done.
Okay, you may be right. Nevertheless, that doesn't mean you don't try.
That's correct.
And I have to say that we have in Albany right here a buyback program. Mm-hmm. So we get some guns off the streets by doing that. That ought to be massively done. Mm-hmm. So you have 300 million guns. You also have a public consciousness. In other words, you know, if somebody knows there's a gun next door, or if somebody knows something like that, and there's somebody who is problematic, you do that. I mean, look, I think there's a certain amount, part of, and I do apologize for this in advance because I've been hearing from mental health professionals, but there's a certain amount of people in this society who are really mentally challenged in many ways, and it's just a percentage. You look at it as if it's a bar graph, and some of these folks are really off the edge. And as a result of that, we have to keep tabs on who does what and who's got the guns. I'm so sorry. I don't mean to stigmatize anybody. And there are many people with mental health problems who don't deserve to be classified with heinous killers.
From what we know right now, and admittedly we probably don't know everything, and even the authorities don't know everything yet, but from what we know right now, this guy in Las Vegas would not have been prevented from getting guns. He has apparently no history
right,
of mental
but,
illness.
That's right, but it doesn't mean he wasn't mentally ill.
But
right.
It also doesn't mean that he was, because he could simply be, there are a lot of people that are not mentally ill that are simply angry, violent, racist, and they have other motivations.
Vera, you mean to say all those things you just said aren't mentally...
No, they're not. They're rage-related. Rage and anger is not mental illness.
I think rage and mental illness do go hand in hand, I happen to believe.
So every man that beats up his partner, domestic partner, his wife, is mentally ill?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Interesting.
Yes,
so
of course I believe that.
I don't think that would be. I don't think the medical community would agree with
yes,
that.
Yes, I agree.
Okay. Okay. But when a guy takes a gun and goes to the 32nd floor, points it out the window and starts killing people. You're telling me that person isn't crazy?
I think I'm telling you that we didn't know about him before.
You know, you
did
said
this.
That. Right. You made a good point.
Well, we don't know if he's crazy or not. Because crazy, I mean, this might be a general term, but what I'm saying is mental health is something that has to be a mental health concern has to be diagnosed. We can't, as non-experts, not simply say you're mentally ill, because that's not accurate.
Well,
we might perceive somebody. I think I don't have a right to claim somebody is mentally ill, because that is not my expertise.
Somebody sticks a gun out of a window and maims 500 people and kills 50-something people, and you're telling me that person isn't crazy? That person's
no,
crazy.
That person could be violent, racist, driven by rage, and that is not
rage
necessarily
is,
a mental illness.
And rage isn't mentally ill?
No.
Yeah, well, I don't agree with you.
Domestic terrorism, but political terrorism.
Wouldn't it also be, if that were the case, wouldn't everybody be...
Somewhere's on the scale?
By reason of insanity. Would be guilty by reason of insanity.
Well, not everybody, but I'll tell you right now, I think a lot of people have beat the rap just saying that and being bona fide, mentally ill.
But I think the other thing, too, is that the right always uses mental illness and mental health as the reason why we can't do gun control. And then you look at the NRA as well, and the one thing I wanted to just touch upon is that they've been silent on this situation since late September.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing on social media, nothing at all. And this usually has been their playbook for the last few different situations.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. All right, so let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue, and we'll get going. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We have about 10 minutes before we have to go to a news break, so we have a lot of letters we would like to get to. Alan has the stack in front of him, so we'll go through them as much as we can.
Matt says, if nothing happened after Sandy Hook, nothing will happen now. Wrong.
Alan, you're... there you go.
Oh, did okay. I do something wrong? Matt said, if nothing happened after Sandy Hook, nothing will happen now. I don't agree with that. I think this stuff is cumulative, and I think Sandy Hook was the worst thing that I've ever seen, the murder of those little children. Nevertheless, I do think it's cumulative. I think there are signs that the Republicans are on the run.
Well, at least when it comes to silencer bills and maybe bump stocks.
Okay, well, at least that's something.
At least something moving the bar forward,
yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Tony says, the President administration, the members of Congress that refuse to do anything about gun safety need to confront a reality and to be honest with us. They need to admit that they can no longer guarantee the safety of the American people when it comes to mass shootings. Of course, that's their job, national security. And Greg says, in a week filled with terrible news, there seems to be one bright spot. Secretary Tillerson announced we had back-channel negotiations with North Korea, direct talks between the U.S. and North, no intermediary country. Then the president seemingly undercut it all in 140 characters. I can't think of a reason for this other than the president appearing tough. I hope the talks bear some fruit in spite of this. At the very best, I think what we could say here is that what the president would tell you he was doing in the confines of his study would be, I'm trying to give Tillerson more negotiating room by saying I'm the tough guy. But, of course, you have to worry about that. It goes wrong.
Yeah, I think it's the opposite, actually. I think Trump has killed off any channels to the North Koreans because, after all, they know that President Trump is the final decision maker. So now Tillerson has no credibility left.
And no staff at the State
and
Department.
And apparently
and
he has no inner circle that protects him and helps him and informs him. There are all kinds of issues with that subject, too.
Joe Allen and panel, I know I took you to task earlier this week for accuracy of your discussion on gun control laws, but I also want you to know that I just pledged for the lockbox to support the important work you and WMC do every day. Let's hope the discussion we are having 1,203 days from now, next presidential swearing-in, reflect a substantial positive change from the current political climate, and that's Mark from Ulster County. Allen says, one U.S. city with the tightest gun control is Chicago. Murders by gunshot are higher in Chicago than New York City and Los Angeles combined, in big letters. Criminals and kooks do not pay attention to gun laws. Just do something does not make sense, but is political expedient, and that's from Allen.
Well, can I just say something to that? Because Ireland is, I mean, Chicago is not an island.
No.
Where, you know, if you have city-based gun control, it doesn't mean weapons can come from elsewhere. I mean, this is sort of a non-argument because of course, when you make any changes, it takes time. And even if more, you know, sort of the IRA, what you were referring to, all these sort of, you know, background checks, and there was a sort of a general repository that to which federal enforcement officers could have access to. All of these things take time. It might take a decade to get out of this kind of conundrum we're in at the moment. So to point to Chicago and say that is the biggest problem, well, it doesn't matter what Chicago city officials decide. It's a national concern that we have to address.
Marianne says, who will pay the hospital bills in Las Vegas? Will victims of the Las Vegas massacre receive bills for hospital care? Will their health insurance pay should they have insurance? Does an event such as the country music concert have to carry insurance for the audience? And that's Marianne from Bern.
I believe I heard that $8 million so far has been raised through some fundraising effort in Las Vegas for that.
Yeah, generally for major events like that, you would have to carry terrorism insurance, you know, whatever it might be.
Is that right?
Yeah, you would. Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Although if you get hit by a baseball at a stadium, on the back of the ticket it always says there's no liability on the part of the baseball team.
Huh. Guns. High panels, snipers, medical detectors, and security rummaging through my stuff. I may as well stay home. I prefer to live in fear in my home than go outside and be looking over my shoulder every 2 seconds, and that's from Rick. Sadie says, recent reporting describes the shooter as a product of dysfunctional family. They report a psychotic father who abused and then abandoned 4 sons when jailed multiple times. Of course, not all dysfunctional childhoods produce murderers, but some do.
We don't know enough about that reporting. I'd like to know what the sourcing is on that.
And also, we don't know if there's
The father was in jail.
Right.
Yeah, he was a violent bank robber.
And an escaped convict.
Yes, and so we also don't know if there's a genetic linkage between father and son. This is, again, one of those assumptions we make. Right. I'll be careful with that, too.
Okay, Lisa says, how do we know ISIS took credit and not some 13-year-old kid in his parents' basement? Also, there's an article today in the shooter's deteriorating mental state. And that's Lisa from Oneonta.
Okay. An article where? I mean, do we need to hear who's writing this stuff before we take it as gospel?
All right. And that's, I think, our point. Jerome says, what I find most disturbing is that he was sane and up to the point of breaking the window and pulling the trigger. Everything he did was legal. Ed says, why do the reports consistently mention his age? Is it that we're shocked that some old would do such a thing, that old would do such a thing? Ageism? Reverse ageism? Other mass killers have not had their ages appended to their name. Ed in Woodstock.
No, that's incorrect. You publish as much personal information, age, middle initial. I had a reporter who would always ask his subject on the phone, what's your middle name? I mean, it's just part of the journalism DNA to get all of that information out there.
Mike says, did she just condemn scopes? Scopes are necessary for hunting. It's more humane to the animal. Sorry, condemning scopes is ridiculous.
Well, I'm not condemning scopes for hunting. I'm condemning scopes for urban warfare. And I have no trouble if you want to have a scope for a hunting exercise. But I believe bringing those types of devices into an urban environment is an entirely different story.
And I just like to ask if the deer have scopes. okay, and now, and I know
they keep finding my car.
I know I'll get into trouble. Ian says, does gun size matter? I wish Rich H. were on the panel today to answer this question. If the right to bear arms shall be infringed, why are automatic weapons illegal? It seems like the line between legal and illegal is arbitrary. And that's Ian in Altamont.
Arbitrary? We want... I am stunned to hear these kinds of comments because really we need militarization by private citizens and urban environments. How about thinking about law enforcement? Our police isn't even weaponized like this.
Panel, says Harold. Why does the motive get such extensive attention? Simply stated, the motive of the Las Vegas shooter is that he was crazy. The focus should be on gun control, not on biography and reasoning of a mass murder. And that's from Stephen Reinbeck, and I have to say I agree with him. I have to say I would agree with him. It's too much on the side of what are we going to know about this guy as opposed to what guns are doing to this country.
Except if we learn that he does have a mental illness by the formal definition, and that he should not have been, because all the weapons I understand he bought legally.
Yeah, no, that's right.
Would you allow somebody who was demonstrably mentally ill to buy these weapons?
And Barbara says, "Hello, Alan. So good to see Alan back at the table. But we won't be hearing any more comments from Murray. As you may know, I've been at home on my ISDN machine or whatever you call it, Comrex. And Murray inevitably sees somebody, the dog, sees the Westie, sees somebody walking outside and starts to yell.
He's always the best part of the show.
A lot of people say that. Yeah. A lot of people say that. And we're all hanging on your weighty words.
Are you going to give him a half hour next week? It's his own show.
Mike says, gun manufacturers. The NRA is mentioned frequently in these recent discussions. What about the gun manufacturers? Who are they? Why not identify them and bring them on the carpet? It's been done, by the way.
Yeah,
I was surprised to hear that, and I don't remember the name of the company of the primary gun manufacturer, but it is consolidated, and it's the old Smith & Wesson, which I think we've all heard of, but they don't use that name anymore.
Lisa with two S's says, how old is the shooter's girlfriend? Uh-huh. Shouldn't she be referred to a woman and not a girl?
Right.
She's 62. You're right.
So it should be his woman friend? Is that what it should be?
I would call her his partner, perhaps.
They seem to be using live-in girlfriend.
Live-in partner, then.
I would use that.
And just for the sense of edification, not that I mean anything by this, but what's offensive about girlfriend? She's young, a girl is young.
Yeah, I think anybody who's over sort of 16 and an adult is no longer a girl, because a girl implies that you're not able to make sound decisions on your own.
And boyfriend would be the same.
I mean, it's just so, it cutesifies. It's fine if people want to use that for each other, but they have sort of an express, agreement to that. I think for us to describe others without a voice in the decision-making of how they are described is something entirely different.
All right, we have one more letter, and then we have to go to a break.
Lee says, agree with Alan. Shooter's motive is secondary. He did it because he could. He had access to weapons of war. No way would have created this kind of carnage with a knife. And that's Lee from Williamstown.
All right, we're late. We have to go to a break. We'll be back. We'll continue our discussion. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. We've been talking about security, we've been talking about gun violence, we've been talking about gun control, we've been talking about mental illness, and the letters that we've been getting mostly are asking us what kind of music we're playing. So that was...
Wasn't there one Link Ray?
It's Santo and Johnny is the artist and the album.
Sleepwalk?
Well, it's a cover.
I've never heard them do that kind of music. Yeah, I thought it was Link Wray playing Raunchy. I think that was the Western song.
There you go.
Man.
Well, see, we learned so much.
I'm usually pretty sharp on that
All
stuff.
Right, you are indeed. All
no
right.
Question.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. Alan Chartag.
Nothing else.
Vera Curious Kelly, Ira Fussfeld, Joe Bonilla, and we are going to move on and talk about other subjects right now as we finish out our last segment of the program. We go to Rex Tillerson, who had a highly unusual press conference yesterday, saying that any reports, which was basically an NBC report that said that there was a long simmering tension with President Trump, and the fact that he referred to the president as a moron, he instead came out and said, I have total confidence in the president. I am here as long as the president wants me to be here, and we are all good.
At no point, Joe, did he ever report Did he ever say, I didn't call him a moron?
Right. It's like read between the lines here. Right. Yeah.
Right. So he took the extraordinary step of calling a news conference to affirm his support of the president, despite what associates describe as his deep frustration with the president and talk of resignation. Help me if I'm wrong, and I look to you, Ira, because you seem to remember these things weirdly like I do, which is the wasn't it earlier in the summer, like July, where Rex Tillerson had to go off on a vacation for a little while to try to reassess?
Yes. Well, it's easy to understand. I mean, beyond all of the craziness that Trump exhibits, you've got two CEOs, and Tillerson is not used to working for somebody else, and he's got to be, he has to be looking at himself in the mirror some days and say, "What the hell am I doing here? Did I need to leave ExxonMobil to do this and to become a punching bag?" By the way, Trump, among other things, yesterday said that this NBC story was not only fake news, but that it was phony and it was all made up. Well, I guarantee you, and I have not spoken to anybody from NBC News, I can swear that that story is not all made up.
Well, it's been corroborated by other news sources.
And he uses that, he tosses around a phrase like that so that his base or those people who are believe that the mainstream media is biased, etc. It's so damaging to this country what this man is doing. And by the way, I know we all know this in this room, and I won't get the FCC to get after us, but he didn't call him a moron. He called him a bleeping moron. And in newspapers, when you're threatened with a lawsuit, we always say truth is the ultimate defense. And I suspect that that phrase fits.
Right. And when you look at even the president's tweet from this morning, you know, where he says basically Rex Tillerson never threatened to resign. And again, continuing to assail NBC News, right?
Right.
But yet, yesterday he shared a video clip of him being praised by himself about the Las Vegas shooting from ABC. So which is it? You know, you call all mainstream media fake news, but you choose who you want to use.
Yeah, he does it all the time. He'll complain about the New York Times today, and then tomorrow he will link to a New York Times
right,
story.
Right, exactly.
Nothing means anything.
No.
Well, when you look at Tillerson, though, what does this mean for, because some of the tensions have to do with the hiring, right, or lack of hiring. And some of the tensions obviously have to do, I think this report of when he called him a moron was from several months ago. However, it doesn't seem to include the latest round where he kind of cut the legs out from under him. The president cut the legs out from under Tillerson in his negotiations with North Korea.
There are a couple of incidents where you could tell that the relationship was getting more difficult and complex and unpleasant between the two of them. Right around the Charlottesville events, Tillerson said, you know, he was repulsed by the idea that President Trump called some of the white supremacists fine people. Fine people were among them, and Tillerson obviously rejected that comment. So we knew there was sort of a divergence happening. And now we see very clearly after the tweet following President Trump's announcement that Tillerson should not have back channels to North Korea because, one should not go back to old policies and renegotiate with the little rocket man. What we have here is an unprecedented situation where a president undercuts the role of the Secretary of State. This has not been seen. This is extremely disturbing because North Korea reads this response as clearly an out-of-control State Department that is very powerless. The Secretary of State has no decision-making power. The president does. And now he effectively undermined any future opportunity to negotiate out of this threat.
So is it a good cop, bad cop strategy, or is in fact this guy a moron? Or both?
Yes, it may be both, Ira. It may well be both.
A bleeping moron, Ira.
A very good point, because the outcome of this may be nuclear war. So if you think about that, and one little mistake here could mean that because the president, let's just say that the folks on the other side, Kim, takes him at his word and says, okay, he's going to fire one at us as a result of this, so we better preempt him.
Can I just say that a good cop, bad cop arrangement is pre-negotiated? This doesn't seem to be pre-arranged.
No, this is, they're flying by the seat of their pants at this point. really.
I mean, Trump thinks he's smart, just like Fredo in The Godfather. He uses the best words.
I knew it was you. I knew it was you.
He uses the best words, and he may actually feel like he's doing something different. And that's what he was elected to do, to throw everything else away the way it was traditionally done, and he's going to do it a different way. Unfortunately, as you point out, he's doing it at the risk of entering a nuclear war.
The Senate Intelligence Committee has not reached a conclusion whether the Trump campaign cooperated with Moscow during the 2016 election. The panel's leaders made the announcement yesterday, distancing themselves from President Trump's claim that the issue is a hoax. The committee continues to look into all evidence to see if there's any hint of collusion, according to the chairman, Richard Burr, a Republican of North Carolina. He told a news conference, along with Senator Mark Warner, a Democrat of Virginia, that the issue of collusion is still open. The committee, one of four congressional panels investigating Russian interference in last year's elections, has reached a general consensus that it agrees with the U.S. intelligence assessment from January that indicated Moscow carried out a wide-ranging campaign to influence American voters before they went to the polls.
Something that Trump said didn't happen, by the way. He says the Russians didn't do anything. So that's number one. Number two, I think this guy is the two senators were fascinating. I watched the whole thing every second.
Burr and Warner.
Yep. I watched every second of it. And it was clear. There were a couple of things that they said that I really was interested in. One was, this is not a criminal investigation. This is a political study. If, in fact, it turns out that we find anything that is criminal, we will turn it over to the special prosecutor, the special counsel, which I think, because that's his domain, which is the criminal side of this. And it did seem as if Burr was taking most of the questions, even if Warner wanted to say more. If the Democrat wanted to say more. So I think Burr is the guy who is on the sharp edge of the knife because he's a Republican, and the Republicans, on the one hand, have to defend their president if they don't want a primary against them. So I think this is a very tough one on them. But it did seem to me that Burr was getting people ready for some major disclosures.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those things in government right now that gives you some hope, that it looks like you've got bipartisan cooperation on a very important matter, unlike what was going on in the comparable committee in the House where that Nunez went off on his own.
Yeah.
It just feels like the circle they're circling the wagons in the White House, and because they can see something. They, first of all, they know what they did or didn't do, but the Mueller investigation is not going away. I don't know that. I think the time may have been passed for him to fire Mueller.
He can't anymore. It's too late. And, he gets impeached if he doesn't.
Oh, absolutely.
And then you have what's going on in the Senate, which also seems to be very serious and even-handed. So it gives me some hope that stuff is going on.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's a very tough situation for the Republicans because they just don't want to lose their seats. They don't want to lose. And they know that if they get on the wrong side of Trump, we've already seen it, he'll put up people against them. And if he doesn't do it, his other ally, Bannon, will do it.
I referenced before briefly the Vietnam series, and in the last episode they had a couple of clips from the Nixon, from the Judiciary Committee at that time.
Does it seem like deja vu to you?
Very much so. There's so much from that era that resonates. But in particular, in terms of partisanship, they showed Peter Rodino, the Democratic congressman from New Jersey, who was the chair of the hearing, calls for the votes, and then they show two or three of the votes on the Democratic side, yes, 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 and then two or three votes on the Republican side, no, no, no. So even back at that time when the evidence was so clear, there was partisanship.
His popularity was not through the floor, Nixon's. In fact,
it went up.
I believe Trump's is lower.
When Nixon came in, his ratings went down, and then they went back up just before the end of the war, that have nothing to do with Watergate.
Alan has some letters. Let's go to those.
Here we go. I'm tired of the gun enthusiast quoting only in capital letters the second half of the Second Amendment. The entire amendment starts with a well-regulated militia being necessary for the security of a free state, et cetera, et cetera. Well, what well-regulated militia do these people belong to? Well, Mike, unfortunately, while I agree with you, the Supreme Court of the United States does not. And as the old saying goes, you know, what we say it is what the Constitution means. That's what they say. Stephen says, if bartenders are held liable for a drunk driver's accident, why aren't bump stop manufacturers held liable for this?
I mean, that's a great question, I think, with that. I mean, if you look at that same correlation, but at the same time, you know, for car accidents, why aren't car manufacturers held at the same standard as well? So, I mean, it's kind of like you have to kind of parse it out in that regard.
Senator James says, Senator Crocker is his title of his missile. Senator Crocker said, Tillerson, Kelly, and Mattis stand between us and chaos. Trump must go. Forced resignation, et cetera, et cetera. And Michael says, guns. Panel, I saw an interview with an ATF agent who said Paddock was not on a watch list because even though he brought 100 guns, he did not buy them in multiples but singly. Had he bought two or three at a time, his name would have popped up. It said pooped up, but it popped up. A small change in ATF protocol would help control Michael. Would help control, period. Michael in Shrewsbury.
Well, I mean, you know, these registries are a major issue. You know, federal registries, we have data of who buys guns, what type of guns, where, what location, but they're not combined. So you have a full understanding of who buys what types of guns and how many.
Right, a full registry, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah.
But what doesn't require the passage of Congress would be the individual properties, the hotels, to do a better job checking people as they go through with us. I mean, this guy brought all dozens of guns through the lobby, up the elevator, into his room. All it would have taken is one metal detector to raise the red flag there. And that don't need Congress for that.
Well, I'm sure that's a reality within
you go to
days
a ball
now.
Game, right. You go to a ball game, you go to a concert, mm-hmm. you go, obviously, the airport, you mm-hmm. go through a metal detector. People are used to it, mm-hmm. and most people, when they're interviewed, say, that's okay. It'll make us safer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Let's go to the final story of the morning, and that'll be in regards to Puerto Rico and the debt question. The president said when he went to Puerto Rico and talked to Geraldo Rivera. I'll let that sink in for a second.
Remember him?
Said that he was going to clear Puerto Rico's debt. Now the White House has decided to dial back that vow.
Walk it back.
Yes. The Trump administration walked back the president's apparent vow to wipe out Puerto Rico's debt, suggesting that the island would have to solve its own financial fiscal woes despite the catastrophic damage it has endured from two powerful hurricanes. Mick Mulvaney, director of the Office of Management and Budget, said on CNN, I wouldn't take it word for word with that. Well, that's what you want with your cabinet. Yeah, I wouldn't take a word to word what he's saying.
Does that get pre-cleared, do you think, when Mulvaney says something like that?
I don't think so. Mr. Mulvaney said that the administration would be focusing its efforts on helping Puerto Rico rebuild from the stern damage, but the Commonwealth would continue to proceed through the debt restructuring process it was undertaking before those storms hit.
You know, it's interesting that, you know, Mick had to come out right after the president because, you know, the president has an insistence in saying whatever he says is whatever his administration is, no matter what any cabinet official will try to say or try not to say. So if the president's saying that, you know, Puerto Rican debt is going to be wiped out by, the, you know, his magic words, I mean, that's not feasible any stretch of the imagination in that sense.
I need some education on this. If New York State or any other state in the union had a debt such as Puerto Rico, would the federal government step in? Is Puerto Rico seeking something that is not being done or wouldn't be done by any other place in the country? I don't know the answer to this.
Well, the other question—I mean, because we saw that with Detroit, obviously, with the municipality.
Mm-hmm. Didn't it happen in Troy?
That's different from the state.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
As we political scientists know, right, Vera?
Yes.
The city is a creature of the state. So it's one thing to be handled one way by the state, who can do anything they want right. with the city. But it's another thing for the state, which is in a federal system, to be bailed out by the feds. It could happen, of course, just by the allocation of the budget. But it's a different story.
It's traditionally not been done that states have been able to declare bankruptcy deal with massive debt like this. It's been Detroit.
Or as Ford to New York, drop yep. dead.
Right.
Yes. But you're saying states have not filed for bankruptcy.
Correct.
Right. But
correct.
What about territories or commonwealths? Because obviously Puerto Rico's not a state.
Yeah, I mean, so we'll have to see what happens there. But I think I looked at some data. It sounded like the debt in Puerto Rico before the storm hit was eight times as much as Detroit.
No.
So we're
question.
Talking
no
about enormous that. Amounts, which makes it highly unlikely, I would guess.
You're right.
Now, what is the I tried to look into this. I didn't see a lot in regards. Salon had a piece about how that Mulvaney came out so quickly because it started to have an impact on the stock market.
It did. The Puerto Rican paper was took a dive as a result of this.
Hmm. So that was also one of the reasons that...
Right, because you have bondholders that, I mean, again, you know, looking back to the recession, I mean, pretty much, you know, the island has had, you know, fiscal issue after fiscal issue after mm-hmm. fiscal issue. So this only, you know, amplifies all the challenges the island has.
But
so,
the broader question is whether or not it's been done before, whether or not there's precedent, whether or not it should be done under ordinary circumstances, you have this territory that is in a disaster zone. You have people who are dying, and Trump is raising the specter of, you know, there's such a thing as a budget, and you're knocking our budget out of whack, as opposed to, we know that there's a lot of fiscal problems we've got to deal with here, but the most important thing are the people on this island, and we're going to be there for you. And let's figure out all this other stuff regarding the debt later. And that's where, as is often the case, Trump, as the consoler-in-chief, is a failure. He, you know, you watch him even yesterday. He didn't say anything demonstrably wrong in Las Vegas yesterday. But when you – I don't know about you, but when I watch Trump give a speech of sorrow, et cetera, it just rings hollow. It doesn't. He's not a great speaker to begin with, but he demonstrates no compassion, and so it's not his instinct. And his instinct in Puerto Rico and what a disaster that appearance was the entire day when he talked about this wasn't as big a disaster as Katrina, as if you're keeping score. He should be showing some remorse and he should be showing concern for the people on the
warmest
island.
Condolences. Yes. So, I think is the word you're looking for. All right, we have 20 seconds.
Okay. So Ira, if you were sitting down there in Louisiana or Alabama, and you were a journalist, could you be thinking it differently?
Okay, I'm sorry. Alan, Vera, Ira, Joe, thank you very much. Great to have you here. We'll be back with more show after this.